Hello and welcome to Backlisted. My name's John Mitchinson. I'm the publisher of Unbound, a place where people crowdfund the books they really want to read.
And I'm Andy Miller, the author of The Year of Reading Dangerously.
And today, we have a slightly different show for you. The show on The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the radio scripts that we were hoping to share with you all today, has been unavoidably delayed. This may strike some of you who know the work of Douglas Adams and the career of Douglas Adams as entirely predictable. However, we apologise for this break in transmission. But instead, we have, I'm going to hand over to my colleague Andy Miller, we have an exciting edition of Locklisted, the podcast that we record for our patrons that we're going to share with all of you today.
Locklisted is a show where we talk about not just books, but also films and music. But this show is one where we, it's one of our more jazz shows, this one, isn't it?
Pretty jazz
show.
We
take the subject of a shelf talker, which some people listening to this, they won't even know what that is, John, but we're not going to tell them yet, right? No. We take the theme of the shelf talker and then we improvise on that theme for an hour. And it's a bit like listening to a bootleg tape of, let's say, Herbie Hancock's Mwandishi group in Tokyo in 1972. Something like that. Something accessible like that.
That's the kind of vibe we're looking for.
Very much.
There is a lot of book chat. So prepare yourselves for that.
Zardoz. If you are listening to this on, let's say, the early part of the week beginning 13th
Tuesday.
Of May 2024, and you are in the London area of the UK, you have an opportunity to come to Foyles this Wednesday, which is the 15th of May at 6 o'clock. We will be opening the doors where we will be recording an episode of Backlisted on the subject of the novel The Good Soldier by Ford Madox Ford with our guest Alex Michalides. That gig is nearly sold out. So thank you so much, everyone who's already bought tickets for it. If you buy a ticket, included in the ticket price is a copy of The Good Soldier, which if for some reason you haven't already read, what tremendous value that represents in and of itself. So please, please come along. There's a handful of tickets left. But furthermore, exclusively, we can reveal that as part of our residency at Foyles in Charing Cross Road in London, in England, in the UK, we have lined up two more shows.
We
are in a position to tell you what those are as well. We can't give you the guests, but we can offer you hints if you are a regular listener. So, John, on Wednesday, the 12th of June,
we are
at Foyles in Charing Cross Road. We will be discussing which ancient text?
We will be discussing Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, or Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, as you will obviously know it. we will be talking about that in all the various translations and adaptations and all its various ramifications. An amazing, obviously alliterative medieval poem, only here, only on Backlisted.
That's entertainment, everyone. That's
that
your night
indeed.
Out in the West End.
And then,
we can't tell you who the guests are, though we know who they are. But if you are a regular listener, and you remember our Beowulf show, it's going to be a bit like that one, which was really good fun. And also, you might be interested to know that at that show, we have a returning guest, a member of the extended Backlisted family, and a brand new guest,
yeah,
eminently qualified to discuss Gawain and the Green Knight. And then, the following month, on Wednesday, the 17th of July, same venue, Foyles, Charing Cross Road, London.
Same time, 6 p.m.
We will be discussing which novel by which novelist, John Mitchinson?
We will be discussing, if I get this right, Eternal Night by Agatha Christie.
He'll have
Endless
learnt the
Night.
Title by July, everyone.
Endless Night by Agatha
Endless
Christie.
Endless Night.
So a 1960s novel by Agatha Christie, a classic. One that amazingly, we have got to episode 210 and not done Agatha Christie, but we will be doing her good and proper with two excellent guests, also one returning and one new, on the 17th of July, 6 p.m. Foyles. You will be able to book those. We'll be able to book those very soon
via the Foyles website in the coming days. Those tickets will go on sale. Doors open at 6, gig at 6:30. So please enjoy the show that we've got coming up. We had a great deal of fun recording this. We began with Shelf Talkers and in a sort of Blakeian manner expanded to take in the universe, which is normally what happens on an episode of Locklisted. Or as Nikki, our producer, has dubbed this, Blocklisted, this episode, which is excellent. See you soon, everyone. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy
Bye.
The show. Bye.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Crack on.
I haven't got all day, for fuck's sake. I got really important emails to write.
Right, okay.
I shouldn't be so, self-pity is very unattractive.
Never stopped you before though, has it? I'm only joking. You're lovely.
All right.
Hey everyone.
Welcome to Locklisted.
Informal banter was caught there. Sorry about that. Welcome to Locklisted. This is the show that you get if you listen to our Patreon, if you subscribe to our Patreon at a certain level, and it features me, Andy Miller. And it features our producer, whose name is
Nikki Birch, hello.
Nikki Birch, hi Nikki Birch. And thirdly, and most importantly, the poet laureate of self-pity himself. Welcome to the airwaves, please.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here. Hope I'm not bringing you down.
It's John Mitchinson. What a posse this is. How have you both been? Have you been having a nice time?
Great, actually. It's lovely and... I've got a couple of days off because it's a bank holiday. I spent the afternoon watching a crappy rom-com when I should have been doing something else. And I'm really feeling very happy.
Which one?
The one with Anne Hathaway in it.
Oh, it's the Anne Hathaway one. It's the Anne Hathaway one where she plays a mum.
Yes.
Who, in the light of what we were talking about before we started, Nick, runs off with a young pop star.
I mean, what were we talking about there, Andy? Yeah, she does. She runs off with a pop star. And let me tell you, it's very exciting. I mean, she's a very, very hot mum. You know, she's definitely, let's just say, what we really unfashionably might have called a MILF once.
We no longer use that term.
I
certainly, good Lord, no. I'm glad you're watching that. I'm reading for pleasure.
That's
Imagine
great,
that. That happens rarely. I'm reading for pleasure, yeah. I'm reading Kevin Barry's novel, Night Boat to Tangier, which, of course, everybody's read, and it came out. To me, it's new, but it seems like it... When did this come out? Goodness me. 5 years ago.
Oh,
long listed for the book prize.
No.
Number one bestseller.
It's practically on the backlist now.
John, have you read much by Kevin Barry?
I have read The Beetlebone, which I loved.
Yeah, that's
an
amazing book.
Night Boat to Cairo as well. But I haven't read the new... I think has he done another set of stories?
Yes, he has. Yeah, he has.
Before this one. I didn't read those. But I love him. I love him.
This has blurbs on the front from... And this is relevant to what we're about to talk about. From Tessa Hadley, brilliantly funny. Ian Rankin, lyrical, elegiac, taut and strange. And finally, Max Porter, our former guest Max Porter.
Ah, I love Max.
Who says of Kevin Barry, a true wonder. And that was making me think about the hoary old topic of book recommendation. Where do we get our book recommendations from? You know, it's very nice. People are say about Backlisted that they get lots of recommendations from the show. Which is good. That's what we would hope. But we, in a version of the famous joke about the clown who goes to the doctor and the doctor says, I'm depressed, and the doctor says, oh, you need to see this clown Grok, And the man says, "But doctor, I am Grok." We don't get to feel the benefit of the recommendations of Backlisted quite as straightforwardly as listeners do. But I wonder where we get our recommendations from. Nikki, where are you most likely to pick up a recommendation for a book?
Well, I think two places. One, mostly you both. Right,
doesn't count.
I mean, yeah, I do speak to you every week, and you do talk about books every week. So,
and you read for your book group, don't you?
I have started to read for a book group too, but then the other is just friends. You know, friends. I occasionally read about something, but mostly it's probably friends saying, "I've really enjoyed this. This is brilliant," or yeah, or coming from you. I'm not a big sort of, you know, let's look at the review in this paper and. Oh, that sounds exciting. I'll go and buy that. I think it's more word of mouth for me. And actually, there's a second thing, a third thing is in bookshops. I love that looks good. I'm just going to buy that. As that is a really nice sort of browsing moment for me.
Are you motivated by Bogoff?
Buy one, get one free. I think I would lie if I said I wasn't motivated by a bargain.
No, you know, of course, aren't we all?
I like a bargain. You think it's a bargain anyway, and I'm there for the kind of false bargain of a Bogoff.
Hey, let he who has not spent time browsing the works cast the first stone.
My mum was deeply distressed by Bogoff because she said, "I don't want three books." She said, I said, "Mum, you don't have to have, you don't." She totally misunderstood. The idea was that if you weren't going to buy two, then you get the third free. She thought if she bought any book at all, they were going to saddle her with an extra two. It's just, yeah.
Well, Mitch, Mitch, on those rare occasions when you're not reading for work, publishing, interviewing somebody, or self-improvement, Where do you pick up? Where do you get your ideas from?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think I get my ideas from pretty much everywhere that books are discussed or talked about. If I overhear things on the radio, because we're both in this sort of, you know, we've both been in this world for quite a long time. I'm continually, I suppose, looking at what other publishers are doing. And every now and then, I suppose, when I'm doing that, looking what other publishers are doing or listening to recommendations, you know, reading recommendations of stuff or on Twitter, I form a sort of list. And quite often on a whim, I'll buy something. A chance, for example, a chance. I mean, I honestly think for the stuff I read for pleasure, I'm always looking for odd things that I haven't seen before or that I, you know, in a vague area, I suppose.
Do you write things down when someone recommends or whatever? You go, I want to work my way through.
I think it maybe changed in lockdown, actually. I think I started to be a bit more disciplined in lockdown because there was more time. Mm. I also, if I'm in a bookshop, I do love that. I love if I go into the London Review bookshop, let's say, which is one of my favourites, I'll probably end up buying a stack of books in there that I didn't intend to. And do you remember that was always the big Waterstones plus, Andy, that when we did research,
yes,
it turned out that Waterstones wasn't massively good at converting people who were looking for specific titles.
Exactly.
But was brilliant at loading people up with shit that they didn't know they wanted.
Well, no, this is true. I don't know the extent to which this would still be considered true now, but 30 years ago, certainly the idea was that that Waterstones catered to people who enjoyed browsing in bookshops, which was in fact the minority of consumers, because many consumers felt underconfident in a bookshop. And John is the archetypal Waterstones customer in that respect, for the experience he's just described in the LRB bookshop, insofar as A, Waterstones customers, when they did the research, were suggested they found it nearly impossible to go into a shop without buying one or two books. And the second thing was that 10% of the Waterstones customer base bought 90% of the books.
Right.
Yeah.
So as we've seen so many often on this podcast, the whole edifice is propped up by the mass market. Yeah, by the loonies, by the mass market. But also, it's sort of a piece with, I don't know.
It's like us and our patrons.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a really interesting thing. So word of mouth, we know that that's what sells things. And I remember back in Waterstones, it was, I mean, you might even remember, Andy, because you might have even been on the receiving end of this. But it was mildly controversial, even back in the early 1990s, when we decided to introduce Waterstones Recommend.
I ran that promotion for 2 years.
And it was basically just formalising what good independent bookshops had already probably started to do. I don't know when I first saw a shelf talker. In my head, I wonder if it was in America. Have we not mentioned shelf
talkers? No, we haven't quite got there. We haven't quite got there. But listen, we're coming on to... Hey, don't fast forward, everybody. Because, yeah, shelf talkers are still coming. It's edge of the seat stuff today.
Cliffhanger.
I want to pick up what John was saying about, yeah, so Waterstones Recommends.
So we were formalising this idea that what people really wanted was recommendation, that what they really wanted was to know, you know, and that idea of what the bookshop staff in particular, because mirabile dictu in those days, you know, Waterstones staff really did read a lot of books. And it really was true, I think, that there were a lot of... I used to call Waterstones a clearinghouse for second-class arts graduates. And I have to say, this is probably... I'm probably showing my age because it was probably before student loans and all the pressure.
It was.
But, you know, if you didn't know what to do when you graduated with your English degree, you went and walked to Waterstones. And it was great because it was a bit like being... You had almost no training in customer service, but you were in a bookshop and you got to read and you got to talk to other staff. And it felt... The whole thing kind of, in some sort of mad way, worked. It was,
I've said in the year of Reading Dangerously that in the entirety of my career in the various roles within the book world that I've had, I never worked with a group of people who liked reading more than the booksellers I work with in London. And that includes working for publishers. In terms, if you wanted an intensity of a group of people who really did spend all their time reading books and thinking it mattered, then that little crib was amazing.
And one reason that you had to do that is it was actually mildly terrifying. You were thrown in, as I was, you know, I'm sure I've told this story before, at the deep end with the science fiction and fantasy section, and you didn't know. You hadn't read a lot of the stuff. I'd read some of it, but I hadn't read all of it. And there was no stock control system. And you were quite quickly in your job talking to reps and being able to buy books off them. You know, they'd come and show you, and you'd say, oh, I'll take 10 of those. I quickly discovered, you know, for example, that Clive Barker was a really, really good seller. And then, of course, what you try and, as a bookseller, I mean, I'm still pathetically like this now, I kind of like to read the things that I'm selling. I'm sort of intrigued as to what people are reading and why they're reading them. The staff room was full of proofs. You were allowed to take books home. You were reading.
I believe it was me who described Waterstones as, in that era, as a finishing school for bullshitters. Because you had to be able to talk knowledgeably about many books which you simply did not have time to be authentically knowledgeable about. We're authentically knowledgeable. There's a euphemism.
I went into a bookshop this afternoon, my local bookshop, Pages of Hackney, and asked Ollie, who was working there, about recommendations. Doing a bit of research. I asked him, and they...
You're suggesting that there's some planning that goes into these episodes.
Like I say, there's a lot of work here. You know, anyway, I asked Ollie, and they have a... It's a very small bookshop, an independent bookshop.
But a very good one.
And they have one sort of shelf dedicated now for Ollie recommends, Eleanor recommends, each thing.
Yeah, okay, nice.
And he says they are, it used to be just two books each, but they got so popular, people would just buy them all. So now they just expanded it because the recommendations do very, very well.
Okay. So this is what John says about the desire for not just recommendation, but personal recommendation, right? There is perennial theme. Now, this episode, everybody, here comes the reveal. This episode was inspired by a shelf talker, which was sent to me by a listener to this podcast in the States, whose name is Augie Blick. Possibly their real name or not, I don't know. But hello, Augie Blick. Thank you so much for sending this in. It was on display in Point Reyes Books near San Francisco quite recently. It may still be there.
It's a great bookshop, that bookshop. And Stephen, who runs it, is a person I know.
It's a shelf talker. A shelf talker is a handwritten or hand-printed sign. John, why don't you... No, hey, you define a shelf talker, John. What is a shelf talker?
Well, in its broadest sense, a shelf talker is simply something that has words on that attaches to a shelf. So a shelf talker might say fiction, A to Z, or it might say psychology, or it might say, God help us all, mind, body, and spirit. But it might also be something that contains words of praise or recommendation for a particular title. And generally those, certainly the ones that really work, tend to be handwritten by actual booksellers, actual people who work in the store.
Okay. So when you go into a bookshop, you go into Waterstones or your independent bookshop, and there on the shelf is a little handwritten thing where someone has attempted to sum up their enthusiasm for a particular book so hard and successfully that you will feel compelled to lift the book off the shelf and take it to the till. So, Augie Blick on Twitter, X, sent me this shelf talker, and I, John, think this is the single greatest shelf talker I've ever read in my life. So I am now...
Okay.
So I'm now going to share it with
Augie.
You. No pressure, right? No pressure, okay? So this was written by... HP, I don't know who that is, but presumably works at Point Reyes Books near San Francisco. HP said this about Thomas Bernhardt's The Cheap Eaters, says HP. And just I want you to remember, folks, this wasn't in the TLS. This is just on a bookshelf in a bookshop. I was still living in Vienna when the death of Thomas Bernhardt in the winter of 1989 was noted with near relish and observable relief by both the larger part of the Austrian press and the not always silent majority of the population. Despite the posthumous tide of Bernhardt adulation, The Cheap Eaters is still little known and read in German-speaking countries. This slim volume of philosophical maniacal rants and furiously exhausted reflections from the beginning of Bernhardt's final period reads like Musil or Wittgenstein knotted into Dostoevsky's Underground Man. It was brought into English with excellent care by Douglas Robertson and given the rare Bernhardt-appropriate book cover design by Spurl Editions. Readers of E.M. Kioran, Elfriede Jelinek, Samuel Beckett, or Kafka will want to submit to Bernhard's labyrinthian narrative of mangled existence and overwhelmed mind.
Wow.
Well, HP, you had me at philosophical maniacal. I didn't even finish reading it. I ordered that immediately.
Really?
I ordered it immediately from the States. And I have the book here. Here it is.
No way.
I ordered it.
It's arrived.
There it is. The Cheap Eaters, and I'm going to just read you the first sentence, and I want you to imagine that, I mean, long-term listeners to this podcast will know that I love Thomas Bernhardt. It's been several years since I read something by Thomas Bernhardt aloud on this show, so it's a treat. I'm only going to read the first sentence of this novel, just the very first sentence of this novel, but I want you to imagine that I'm a bookshop customer. I've read that blurb by HP. I've bought the book. I thought, wow, what's this going to be like? I sit down, I get in, and this is the first thing I read. While taking the walk that he had been taking for the purposes of his studies every late afternoon for weeks, and also routinely at about 6 a.m. for the preceding 3 days, a walk that passed through Wertheimstein Park, in which he said he had once again been able, owing to the ideal natural conditions prevailing solely in Wertheimstein Park, to return after a rather long interval from a completely worthless train of thought regarding his physiognomy to a useful, indeed ultimately uncommonly profitable one, and hence to a resumption of his work on his essay, an essay he had neglected for the longest imaginable time owing to his inability to concentrate, an essay on whose realisation, he said, in the end depended a further essay, on whose realisation genuinely depended yet another essay, and on whose realisation depended a fourth essay on physiognomy based on these three essays that unquestionably needed to be written and on which his future scientific work and consequentially his very future existence actually depended, all at once and all of a sudden, instead of walking to the old ash tree as usual, he had gone to the old oak tree and thereby happened upon his so-called cheap eaters with whom for many years on weekdays and hence from Monday through Friday at the Vienna Public Kitchen and hence in the so-called VPK and specifically the VPK on Döblinger Hauptstrasse, he had eaten cheaply. Well, I, for one, would not be returning the book for the shop, to the shop, but I can't guarantee everyone might feel the same way. I must say, The Cheap Eaters by Thomas Bernhardt is, it's not available in the UK easily. You would have to import it from the States, but my goodness, it's fantastic. Douglas Robertson, this is translated into English for the first time only 2 or 3 years ago. I strongly recommend. It was called Die Billigesse when it first published in 1980. As HP suggests, if you're a fan of Musil, Wittgenstein, Dostoevsky and Kafka, you'll find a lot to enjoy there. But I it made me think a lot about the art of writing a shelf talker. John, I remember
handwritten when notes.
These are the little bits of handwritten notes that booksellers put on top of a certain book to try and encourage you to buy it.
Yeah, or on the shelf. But I remember one from when Michael Crick's biography of Jeffrey Archer was published. I can remember walking into a bookshop and seeing a shelf talker in front of it that simply said, quote, "I hate this book, Jeffrey Archer."
That's pretty good.
which is a pretty good sales technique, I think.
I wrote one for a book, and I used to try and, when we were trying to encourage Waterstone staff to do their own, because, you know, we didn't want to do it as some horrible central, you know, we just, essentially what we did was we provided them with the cards that they could stick on the shelves. And some of them did it brilliantly and some of them didn't. But it was always trying to get them to see that, I mean, that was a brilliant one that you read out, that it was, it's stuff that makes people sit up and think that is likely to sell a book more than a plot summary or, you know, a breathless, you know, usual breathless hyperbole that you get from kind of publishers. But I remember writing, and I still like it. There was a first novel, okay, by a man called Duncan Sprott called The Clopton Hercules. And I said, the line was just this: the first novel published by Faber from their slush pile since William Golding's Lord of the Flies, which is what I was reliably told was the truth. But you're going to pick that book up, aren't you?
Wow.
You're going to pick that book up and think, "Woo!"
Yes, absolutely, yes. Well, it's interesting, John. You describe as a shelf talker. Then about what a good shelf talker is. It's a shelf talker is basically a literary podcast avant la lettre, isn't it? It's like you don't want to do a plot summary,
a little three dimensional.
Yeah, you want to make it sound kind of intriguing. And
here's one. Let's see if you can guess what this book is. And this is from Waterstone's Islington in quite some years ago. It's by Adam. So, you know, if you're in the shop, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Without using an important grammatical tool, you might think that this author was limiting his linguistic ability. Not so. This is, in fact, a gripping story with twists and turns, plots and subplots, inspiring. And that is The Shelf Talker. And what's the book, Andy? You know what it is.
It's a novel by Georges Perec.
Yes!
Published in English as A Void.
A Void.
Because it does not use the letter E at any point.
Really?
And neither does Adam's Shelf Talker.
Another does Adam's Shelf Talker, which makes you love Adam very much.
Adam, if anyone knows Adam.
Adam from Waterstones Islington, if you're still out there, because I think this must have been about 2008 or 2009.
I wonder if you're working in a bookshop, like this is the fun stuff, isn't it? Like this is the,
yes.
This is where you're thinking, Okay.
Yes.
Not only I get to think about my choices, because if you work in a bookshop, you love books and you think your knowledge and opinion on certain books are probably quite highly of them, and you want other people to read the books that you love. And so this is where your time and energy is going to be well spent, because not only are you directing people to go and, okay, please can I have a book a bit like The Power? Okay, yes, over here. But also you want to be diverting them to books that you genuinely feel are good. So I can imagine this must be the bit where you're thinking, okay, this is where I excel myself. And if you're a crap writer who works in a bookshop and loves books, that must be very hard.
Well, I tell you what, Nick, I used to choose very judiciously which customers I recommended any book I actually cared about to, because
otherwise you'd point over there and say Shantaram. Yeah,
you just, do you know what I mean? No, do you know what I mean? Because you didn't want to give something away and then have it tarnished by them coming back the next day and saying, I thought this was rubbish. So what you have to do is, as John will, you know, in the 90s, it was certainly in the area of London I worked in, we sold a lot of novels by Mary Wesley to middle-aged women. And we sold a lot of novels by Patrick O'Brien to middle-aged men. And the middle-aged men said exactly the same thing about Patrick O'Brien every time they brought one to the till, which was, have you read this? The attention to detail is magnificent. And the women said exactly the same thing every time they brought a Mary Wesley to the till, which was, have you read this? She's marvellous, you know. Yeah. And you wanted to say, I'm a 23-year-old man. I'm not going to read either Mary Wesley or Patrick O'Brien. But you couldn't say that because that wasn't your job. Your job was to go, my goodness, yes, the attention to detail in Mary Wesley. Sorry, Patrick O'Brien really is incredible.
So it was a bit like working in the CD shop and people coming
affirmation,
into me asking
affirmation.
For, the latest Bob Dylan bootleg. Yeah.
So people do want recommendation, but they also want affirmation for their own choices, right? Now, Mickey, we set you a piece of homework for this episode, didn't we? To follow up John's shelf talking. Jive talking by the Bee Gees should have been called shelf talking, shouldn't it? Anyway, go on.
To
Nick,
write my
got?
Own shelf talker. Bearing,
to write your own
bear
shelf
in mind,
talker.
I am not a writer.
And bear in mind, you're going to be assessed by a writer and the former marketing director of Waterstone. So let's see how we do.
Okay. So I have chosen a book which backlisted audience and lotlisted people will be familiar with. Okay. Right. I'm going to give the one line first and I'll read the rest of it. And you can guess what the book is. First line, not a detective story, but a philosophical mind exploder. Okay. That's the first line.
Mitch is actually, I can see, if you could see John's face, everybody, John is seriously, that the little light bulb went on above his head while he starts to cogitate. Come on.
Okay, I should have taken John's advice beforehand because I actually do go into the plot now.
It's a rookie error, Mickey.
It's an eerie 2021 where the world has become infertile and the human race is aging into obsolescence. This story makes you question life's most profound questions. Why are we here? What truly matters in a world stripped of its future?
Wait. It makes you question life's most profound questions.
Shit, I didn't realise that. I obviously didn't say shit. Just, double words. Thank you. Makes you check. Like, no, I don't know. I need to come back
you
to that.
Ask.
Makes you, thank you. Thanks for the edit.
Yeah,
makes you ask life's most profound questions. Why are we here? What truly matters in a world stripped of its future? Put away the bestsellers for one read and give this a go. It'll linger in your head for a long time afterwards. That's my not very well written description.
And that's by Nikki from Hackney,
PDJs. However, I then decided to ask ChatGPT to write a shelf talker of the same book.
Oh, this is brilliant. This dovetails with what I'm going to talk about. Brilliant.
So this,
go on.
And I didn't put my blurb in. I just said, can you just write Children of Men a book? I didn't use the word shelf talker because I wasn't sure it knew what it writes.
No,
a bookseller
recommendation
by P.D. James. Okay. And this is what they came out. No, I didn't even edit it afterwards. In P.D. James's masterpiece, Children of Men, experience a dystopian future where humanity faces extinction and a single ray of hope lies in the hands of one woman. With rich prose and gripping storytelling, James weaves a tale of intrigue, danger, and the enduring power of the human spirit. Join us on a journey that will challenge your perceptions, ignite your imagination, and leave you breathless until the very last page. Discover why Children of Men is a timeless classic that resonates with readers long after they've turned the final page. Which is basically what I said, but in a lot more kind of wordy way.
You know, Nikki, do you know what? Do you know what? If someone had presented me with that that AI-generated blurb, yeah, I'd have gone, this is remarkably commercially focused. This is remarkably effective. I think the public would eat that up with a spoon, John. I think that's actually horribly good.
Pretty good,
isn't it?
Yeah.
As a bit of bump.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. I tell you, it does great. It's very good. AI is very good at this.
This sort of stuff.
Well,
you know, so I'm sorry, but Ollie from Pages, your job is over soon, mate, because AI is coming for you.
That was written by Wally rather than Ollie.
Wally.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
I've got now a little quiz for you two. You've both been quizzing. I've got a quiz for you two. And this is similarly, this is the power of the internet to generate recommendation as opposed to personal bookseller recommendation. And what I've got here are a handful of examples of books where what I've done is gone to a popular online retailer and I've looked at what other books other customers bought if they bought this book, or what other books you might like.
Oh, yes.
If you bought this book.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to give you each the associated books, and you have to tell me what book I was looking at when I found these. Okay. Is that clear?
Yes. What links these three books?
I'm going to give you the recommendations, and you have to tell me what the popular online bookseller had chosen to drive you back to the original book. Okay. So Nikki, we'll start with you.
Is it Ballet Shoes?
Which book would you have been reading if it was suggested to you that you would also enjoy You Are Here by David Nichols and Noreen Masood's A Flat Place?
Oh, that's interesting. What a combo, because those are the two books you mentioned on last week's show.
Weird.
Oh, that's weird. Is that actually weird? Are you not being clever? That actually both came up.
I'm being clever, but they did both come up. What is it? Which book?
Noreen Masood.
Which book would appeal to readers of You Are Here by David Nichols and A Flat Place by Noreen Masood?
It's not a Marsh Island. No, hold on.
It is.
Oh, okay,
it's
fine.
It's a Marsh Island by Sarah Orne Jewett.
Okay, very good.
Now, with no false modesty, I suspect backlisted listeners have created that algorithm.
Right,
so thank you very much, everybody. Right, John, are you ready? Which book would you be looking at if you were encouraged by this retailer to also read the following? Cuddy by Benjamin Myers, Dart by Alice Oswald, and the Penguin Book of Elegy edited by Professor Stephen Regan.
Ooh.
Well, John, you've talked about two of those three books, right?
What?
Yeah.
Dart by Alice Oswald, Cuddy.
Yeah, and the Penguin Book of Elegy, edited by Professor Stephen Regan.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Which book would you be looking at if you were also recommended those?
One in the Northeast.
Correct.
Is it the one that... Oh, you were talking about. Hold on. Has John talked about this, like this book on the show?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We've done it. We've made a show on it.
We've made a show on the book that this is...
Yeah.
Set in the Northeast.
Yeah. Within the last year, we made this show.
Yeah, come on. Really? Backlisted.fm. Look at the index.
No,
not it's clearly not Walter Greenwood. That was set in the Northwest.
Yeah, that's
I can't think what was
Shall
set
I tell
in
you?
Yeah. Go on.
Brig Flats.
Oh.
Brig Flats. Oh, yeah. Okay. Elegies, maybe. Okay. Yeah.
I thought that's pretty good. Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I can
that
sniff out good. The thinking, if not the book.
All right. Here's one for Nikki. Nikki, which book would you be buying or reading if the online retailer suggested you might also enjoy A Little Life by Hania Yanagihara, The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, and The Secret History by Donna Tartt?
What is the link between The Bell Jar?
There is a clue in there.
Is it a book we featured on the podcast?
No. Gosh, that's a good question. I don't think so.
What's the clue?
No,
so
I think
it's
maybe
not Anne Sexton.
It's not Anne Sexton.
Okay.
All right. What's
yeah,
the clue?
Give us the clue and that might help. Is it the nationality of the first one?
It's in the question itself.
Okay, say it again.
The clue is in the question itself. Would it be A Little Life by Hania Yanagihara? Would it be The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath? The Secret History by Donna Tartt? Which is the book?
I don't know, Andy. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, it's The Goldfinch.
Oh, do you know what? I was just going to say The Bloody Goldfinch. And then I thought that was a stupid answer.
Once again.
Double bluff.
Once again, Nikki Birch. She's, her instincts are sound.
Oh, I should have gone with it. Okay.
Here we are. John Mitchison is going to love this one. Ooh. I am absolutely certain.
We need
John,
to get one right.
Which book, I'll give you a clue, which novel, if you went on the page for this novel, you would be encouraged to also perhaps enjoy the following books. The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
Mal d'Aurore and Poems by Comte Lautremont.
Yeah.
And Museum Without Walls by Jonathan Meade.
It's got to be Huysmans. Got to be Huysmans.
It is Against
well
Nature by Huysmans.
Well done.
Isn't that great that Meade has got in there? That's
I
fantastic.
Thought you'd be pleased. Be John, pleased.
He'll be
edited,
even more delighted.
Edited that book, Museum Without Walls, and Unbound published it. And then finally, I've got a couple for both of you.
Okay.
You can just, if you think you know the answer, just say it out loud. Which novel would you be looking at if you were recommended these three novels? Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, and The Tenant of Wildfell Hall by Anne Bronte.
It's got to be another Bronte.
Jane Eyre,
Bronte, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, and The Tenant of Wildfell Hall by Anne Bronte. Which book?
It's got to be another Charlotte Bronte book, isn't it? Villette by Charlotte Bronte.
You think it's Villette, do you?
Yeah. Is that your final answer?
Shirley?
Is that your final answer? Shirley? No.
Shirley.
It's Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen.
Damn.
And then finally, I must have the exact title and author or authors for the following one. Which book would you be looking at if you were recommended the following novels? The Visitor by Lee Child. Personal by Lee Child. The Midnight Line by Lee Child. Night School by Lee Child. The Enemy by Lee Child. Gone Tomorrow by Lee Child. Nothing to Lose by Lee Child. Worth Dying For by Lee Child. No Middle Name by Lee Child. And 61 Hours by Lee Child.
Big gap in my knowledge, the Lee Child.
The Lee Child books. Jack Reacher.
Jack
Reacher books, are they?
They are all Jack Reacher books,
okay.
Yes.
That's not very helpful.
Do you know why he's called Jack Reacher?
Go on, why?
Because Lee Child himself is very tall. And he was trying to write novels. And his wife, in the supermarket one day, as he reached up and got something from the top shelf, she said, well, if the writing career doesn't work out, you'll always have a career as a Reacher.
Wow, and of such moments are legends made.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that, in fact, you're so close. You'd be looking at Better Off Dead by Lee Child and Andrew Child.
Yeah.
Part of the franchise. And I can tell you, I felt we'd already taken her name in vain on the last episode, but I can assure you that apparently, according to the algorithm on Amazon, that readers of Lee Child and readers of Colleen Hoover only read other books by Lee Child and Colleen Hoover. It becomes that thing where I seem to remember back in the early days of the Harry Potter success, people tended to say. And of course, the success of the Harry Potter books means that whole worlds of children's literature will open up to young readers. And that and in fact, the research shows that that didn't happen. What happened is J.K. Rowling sold a lot of books and whole worlds of franchises related to Harry Potter opened up rather than creating a boom. Yes, rather than creating a boom in children's reading. But that, hey, that's, you know, that's okay too. But I think if you're a very popular writer and you have a readership who enjoy what you do, then the reason why a publisher encourages you to write a novel a year is because you want to get as many books out there as fast as you can while people really love what you do. Make hay while the sun shines, I think, is the point, really.
As a writer, how do you feel about the people that are recommended alongside you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
What a brilliant question.
You must have looked at yourself when you looked this, right?
Okay, so you tend to... Such a great question, Nick. You tend to sit there thinking, oh, really? Or, or oh, my goodness, it goes either way. Very rarely did you look at it and go, yeah, fair enough. You either feel flattered or insulted. I see. It tends to be one or the other.
Okay, I see. That makes sense. So, because obviously... As you said, like you've proved in your brilliant quiz that, you know, an algorithm can be swayed by a few people purchasing in certain purchasing habits, you know.
And
you know, it's the same, you know, any kind of recommendations are only based on what other people have bought or done or listened to recently. And it's interesting because there's a, I think we, because I work in podcasting a lot, and there's an assumption that the recommendations around things like podcasting or music that they know so much about you. They must know you better than you know yourself sometimes. People have this kind of thing of like, oh, well, it's all very, very clever. Like I work for BBC Sounds and there's a thing like, oh, it's serving me all this sort of thing. It's actually, it's not always as sophisticated as one might think. And as we've shown here, like can be easily swayed by a few people purchasing those two books together. And it's not, you know, and I think but society now has kind of let the algorithm take over and tell us what we want and tell us what we should be recommended.
I mean,
you know,
rather than
actively kind of pursuing and searching and realizing it can be manipulated very easily.
I'm thrilled that readers of the best selling You Are Here by David Nicholls are being encouraged to buy Sarah Orne Jewett's Marsh Island.
I mean, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I was looking at this, the David Nicholls, it's number one as we speak. In the old days, you would have expected to find quotes from reviews or quotes from the BBC or radio or TV shows. And the drift now is totally towards, this book is almost entirely covered with quotes from other writers or celebrities who might fit what the publisher thinks David's profile is, right?
Who are they?
So I've got, do you know what? Why don't you try it? I'll narrow it down. They're writers. Why don't you name me which a couple of writers each you would expect to find or aspire to find recommending David Nicholls' new book on the cover?
I guess it depends the audience that they're trying to meet. Sally Rooney?
No, ooh, but it's a good guess.
No, I think they're going to go for... the Caitlin Morans, the Dolly Aldertons.
Ding! Caitlin Moran, tick. Yep. Is she's here? She says Nicholls' best book ever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. You wouldn't get Marion Keyes, would you?
Yes, Marion Keyes.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
Marion Magnificent, Keyes. Marion Keyes says.
Dolly Alderton. Where else would you go?
Well, Philip Pullman likes a good quote. Is he on there?
No, he's not here. No.
The new Philip Pullman. I bet Catherine Rundell is on there.
Yeah, ding.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yes.
Catherine Rundell.
Good,
well
good.
Done.
That's very good. Any men on there?
Now, here's the thing. So on the front cover, we have gorgeously witty and joyful Catherine Rundell, magnificent Marion Keyes, Nicholls' best book ever, Caitlin Moran, such a lovely book, Nigella Lawson.
Oh, good.
I bet Elizabeth Day.
No. And on the back cover, Genius, another classic and funny love story, says Matt Haig.
Matt Haig.
Now,
okay.
Here are the two things that I would like to observe about that selection of quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, all four quotes on the front cover are from famous women writers.
Mm-hmm.
Women.
Yeah.
And indeed, when I did the event with David a couple of weeks ago, it was noticeable that 95% of his audience were female.
Yeah.
So that's who they're going for. But also, John, these quotes are fairly, they're literally four words at most, and those words are not complicated ones. Magnificent.
Triumph.
Best book ever. Such a lovely book. You know, what I think is interesting is the... but what I think is interesting is the positioning of recommendation as celebrity recommendation, which is what we could call this, as something that a friend would say to you, not this soaring triumph of what it means to be human, but what a lovely book.
Couldn't put it down.
It's really taking it down to absolute basics. And I wonder whether that is a thing that you've noticed in terms of endorsements.
Absolutely.
That what you really need is Barack Obama saying two thumbs up.
Well,
nothing more, because he's Barack Obama.
It almost feels like sort of a form of kind of nuclear weapon stockpiling now. You kind of have to have, you have to have a lot.
The really? Charms race, John.
Yeah,
the race.
Charms race. Oh, Andy, that's brilliant. That's what it is. I mean, you have to have, if you look, it's called A+ content in Amazon, okay?
Yeah.
And it's basically below all the sort of the descriptive stuff. You'll have pictures and, graphics, and you'll have all of these really laid out, all of these quotes. And it's almost like you have to have a certain critical mass of these to get people to take this seriously as a contender for the bestseller lists. I mean, this is a really perfect example. They've done their homework well. They've ticked all the boxes. We spend a lot of time talking about this. Years ago, do you remember I talked about a book called The North Water by a writer called Ian...
It came recommended by Hilary Mantel.
And Martin Amis.
Yes.
Ian Maguire.
Ian Maguire,
that's right.
Thanks, yeah. Nikki. Ian Maguire. And that was enough. I mean, that and the fact that it was set on a whaling ship in the 19th century was enough to make... pick it up.
Thank you, Father Mapple.
I do feel they almost cancel each other themselves out now. It's funny. You need to have that critical mass of endorsements and blurbs, as they're called. Americans call them blurbs. As you say, they don't really give you any feel for the book.
It's more that, as you suggest, you're disadvantaged if you don't have
it. It's sort of what you would call in retailing a hygiene factor, you know. You have to, nobody wants, it's that thing when you see a pub advertising freshly prepared meals.
Luxury flats.
Yeah, all of that.
We live in different times. I have a book here that I've also been dipping into for pleasure, which if you're of a certain age, you'll remember the film. It's the novelization of John Borman's 1973 film Zardoz.
That's the most incredible cover.
Yeah, about a giant flying stone hen head and Sean Connery in a futuristic kind of nappy on the front. And this doesn't come with any celebrity endorsement from 1973.
If it did.
No Barbara Woodhouse, no Norman Mailer, right. Nothing. It's just, I'm just going to read you the blurb on the back, because we do love blurbs on here, right? So this presumably was issued around the same time that the movie was released. John Borman was the director of, at that point, Point Blank and Deliverance. So he was, he was riding off the back of some successes. And this novelization is John Borman with Bill Stair, by which Bill's been bunged some money to turn John's script into a novel. Anyway, imagine you didn't know anything about the film and you just read this on the back. Zardoz. I mean, he had me at Zardoz. Zardoz. Through the lowering clouds came the face of Zardoz, the god who gave Zed and the exterminators the right to mate, the means to kill. What else in life was meaningful? Then Zed entered the Godhead, seeking its mysteries, entering the world of the Vortex, where death was banished forever, stirring the long-forgotten sexual desires of the Eternals, dividing them, reversing time itself to find the true secret of the Tabernacle. Zed, an unlikely champion against eternal evil.
I love it. I love it.
Imagine, Nick, you got that home and it read like Thomas Bernhardt. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Are you enjoying this book?
Oh, my God, it's terrible. Of course I am.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Who would you recommend it to? Readers of what, Andy?
Oh, God, no. I mean, recommended for readers of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, etc. No, I don't know. Hey, Zardoz, this is the beginning of the chapter. Nothing was easy. Life came hard and short. The young boy Zed took shelter at the side of his father from the merciless wind. They were fortunate. They were the blessed ones. They waited at the mountaintop. Others were gathering on horseback, all moved to the appointed place. With heads turned to the point on the horizon from whence Zardoz would come.
Whence?
A shout. Whence? Zardoz would come. Blah, blah, blah. Whence? A shout rose up. Whence? Zardoz comes! Through the lowering clouds came their god. This was to be the first time that Zed would see him. Even he, a warrior's son, shook with fear and fell to his knees when he saw God. A gigantic stone head slowly descended towards them.
Very random.
Vast and menacing, its huge face carved into a frightening grimace, its eyes glowing, its face glittered with rain.
Low.
How could a head live without a body? What kind of creature could have borne this monster? Perhaps the body was invisible and all around them. Do you see, readers? Do you see? Zed stood firm, the warriors rose, and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, come on. It's all very, you know, it's Brig Flats is all very well, but it's Zardoz that feeds you.
Oh, I love it.
It's wonderful.
It'll be in our newsletter as being recommended soon, because I've noticed that a book that I was criticising on the last lock listed was recommended in our newsletter.
Good. We're a broad church, aren't we, John? But we're still a church, as Dave McRedman used to say.
Love it.
Oh, that never gets old. Thanks, David. I think we've
recommended a few books there.
I think we've shelf talked, haven't we? I mean, the only thing I think with shelf talkers, John, I've waited 30 years to say this to somebody from Waterstones Management. I was that resentful bookseller who felt, you're not turning me into a little monkey who's just going to write copy for you for free and trade on my personal recommendation. I was terribly grumpy about that sort of thing.
Did you not
do them? Yeah, I was. Oh, I never did them.
No, there were always, tractable members of the team who were.
Where are they now?
John was the boss.
I was marketing director for the whole chain, Nikki. I wasn't the boss. I was merely a sad enabler at head office who got.
You were middle management.
I wasn't middle management. I was very much, very much senior management, Nikki.
John made a point earlier, which is well worth saying. That the reiterating that the booksellers and the branch managers of Waterstones in those days were not backwards in coming forwards if they didn't like one of your choices that had been handed down from head office. And I once took consecutive calls. This is an absolutely true story. Where a panel of booksellers had selected a book called The Tao of Muhammad Ali to be Waterstones Book of the Month. And I took consecutive calls from one branch manager in the north, excoriating me for choosing such an unliterary book as The Tao of Muhammad Ali. And I put the phone down, and the next call was from a manager two towns over from the first one, thanking me for profusely for selecting a book for Book of the Month that branch could actually sell. And that's true. That's absolutely true. That's what you were dealing with. One chain with very different markets from town to town. And I guess that's still the case now, isn't it? Anyway, I think this has been a lot of fun.
It has.
Why not? Send us in your favourite Shelton. No, please don't.
And we'll try not to read them. Yeah.
We'll try not to read them out. All that remains for us to say is the Douglas Adams episode is coming soon. We're re-recording it shortly, and we're very much looking forward to that too.
Yeah. Thanks for the recommendations, guys.
Yeah.
Been a pleasure.
Zardoz.
Yes. Keep
Zardoz.
Keep reading.
See you later.
See you, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks
Bye,
a lot. Everybody. Bye. Bye.